Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found, including nuclear power, unfortunately. How you doing, everybody? This is Harvey Wasserman. I'm back. We're back for another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Hour. We got you may need to take Prozac for this one, but we're going to be talking about Fukushima. We're going to be talking about nuclear power and the media. I've got a great guy back, precisely the right guy to talk about nuclear power and the media. I did want to give you an update. Today is Veterans Day, November 11th. You may be listening to this later on from the archive, but this is the anniversary, the 30-month anniversary of the disaster, the beginning of the disaster of Fukushima. Let's put it that way, because the situation is worse now after 30 months or so than it was when things first started. And I am fasting today. I'm doing just liquid smoothies and stuff like that. No solid food from dawn to dusk. This is going to start. We're going to build this all over the world on the 11th of every month, this being 11-11, Armistice Day, the day commemorating the end of the Great War. There are no Great Wars, the awful war, the First World War. But I am focusing on Fukushima in part by not eating any solid food today. And I know other people around the world are doing the same. We're going to build on it the 11th every month. So if you want to join us then on December 11th, or even if you're listening today, please do. Please let us know that you're doing it. I just found out today, actually, on the 11th of every month, there has been a Fukushima vigil in San Francisco that I didn't know about. And that's going to be part of this as well. The other news from Fukushima, we delivered with MoveOn.org and RootsAction.org and other organizations on the 7th, over 150,000 signatures at the United Nations. They went straight up to Ban Ki-moon, asking that the nations of the world get together and join in and take over at Fukushima in a worsening situation. We still have hundreds of tons of radioactive water pouring into the Pacific Ocean every day at Fukushima. We have three radioactive molten cores that have disappeared, for God's sakes. Rory O'Connor has just joined us. Rory, can you do, in all the years that we've, Rory also has gray hair like me, so we've been doing this a while. In all the years we've been talking about nuclear power, nobody ever said three radioactive cores would melt into the ground simultaneously. If you and I had gotten up in front of an audience and said there'd be a triple meltdown, they'd have yelled at us for being not credible. And here we have three cores, nobody knows where they are.
You know, there's only been two accidents in the whole history of the world that have gotten the highest possible disaster rating, Fukushima and Chernobyl.
Right.
And, you know, Chernobyl is a good thing to look at quickly because, you know, 27 years after the accident, they're just now beginning to move to cover up the sarcophagus, which is covering up the nuclear
right.
waste. In other words, there's no end in sight there. And you can only imagine what end there will be for Fukushima unless there's some radical action taken very, very soon.
Yeah, and radical action, that we don't know what shape it can take. Now, the thing about Fukushima is it's a completely unique situation. So to stage this show, Rory and I are going to talk a while about the media and Fukushima and why and how it fails to cover this accident. It's, we have just seen, we've just been subjected to, those of us foolish enough to watch it, a mockumentary by a guy named Robert Stone called Pandora's Promise. I have to say, and then after that we'll go deeper into the realities of the accident. And people feel free to call in at 888
What's that number again?
888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. If you want to listen on the phone, it's 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869 and 888-874-4888. You can call in if you want. So let's talk about the media. Rory, you and your buddy Danny Schechter, who has a show here at PRN, the News Dissector, the legendary News Dissector. You're among the pioneers, really, in taking on corporate media. And
look where that got us.
Yeah. Well, actually, PRN and other alternatives and are becoming more powerful.
It got us to the internet is where it got
us. Exactly right. And that's where we need to be.
Yes.
I've just been talking with MoveOn.org. I put a petition up at MoveOn.org, and I'm certain that because of the power of the so-called alternative media, that people knew about this petition. Within less than a month, we are now at 115,000 signatures. And I can actually send out an email, an article, and get to 90, 100,000 people right away. And they're from all over the world. The signer list on the petition at MoveOn.org, and I do recommend people, I ask people, go to it. I've got it linked from nukefree.org. I'm trying to get people to go to nukefree.org and then click over to moveon.org, and they've been doing that in great numbers.
However they get there, I encourage them to go both to moveon.org and nukefree.org and to make contributions to both. And I don't necessarily mean financial, but make a contribution of your time, fast, such as you're talking about. Do something. You know, we're here in New York City, and everywhere you go in the subway, Harvey, as you know, there are big signs. They say, if you see something, say something. Well, guess what? I see something happening in Fukushima, and I'm saying something about it. And I encourage everybody who's listening and everybody who's not to do the same, because it's shocking what's going on there. And it's even more shocking the level of bad reportage and non-reportage of what's happening.
It's astounding. Here is the biggest disaster in the history of the world. There's absolutely no doubt that Fukushima is the biggest disaster in the history of the world.
Well, certainly the biggest nuclear disaster.
There's nothing comparable. What else is comparable, really? Of course, we just had a gargantuan typhoon.
I was going to mention the Philippines and God knows how many people dead. But certainly
10,000. Minimum 10,000.
Minimum 10,000. Yeah. But in the nuclear context, yes. As I said, only Chernobyl and Fukushima have ever been rated at the top of the international nuclear accident scale.
Right. And this is even worse than the BP spill in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yes,
and so now what we've got here is zero coverage, or close to zero coverage, from the corporate media.
Well,
why do you think the corporate media won't cover
this? Well, first of all, there's all kinds of media, all right? And there's media all the way from tsunami stones, 1,000-year-old warnings near Fukushima of what could happen, all the way to the modern internet, which was the birthplace of Move On, as we know. But guess what? Even if you have the media, you have to pay attention to the warnings. If you have a 1,000-year-old tsunami stone that's saying, don't build your house any closer to the shore than this, and you ignore it, well, we've seen what could happen. So it's one thing to say that we need more media. It's another thing to say we need better media.
Better media. And I got to say, I have won a few awards over the decades of my writing, and one of the first ones I won was at Mother Jones. And I wrote a piece that was published in 1979, the year of Three Mile Island, and it wrote about these crazy people in the Philippines who were trying to build a nuclear plant in an earthquake zone that had a history of tsunamis and of typhoons. Now, can you imagine if there had been, there are no nuclear plants, no nuclear reactors, commercial reactors in the Philippines. Thank God.
Thank the Lord, I guess.
Can you imagine what would have happened if we had Fukushima going on, which we do right now, and then this gargantuan, god-awful typhoon swooped in and buried a nuclear reactor.
I'll tell you what I can imagine. I can imagine that the fuel rods that are in the spent fuel pool, which is suspended above the reactor number 4, as you know, are in a highly vulnerable state. And if a typhoon or a tsunami or another earthquake hits Fukushima, there's a very good chance that we could be back into criticality, into a very desperate situation almost immediately. So these are things, that the Haiyan typhoon killed, 10,000? As we said, 10,000 people. That's all we know.
And so far.
So far, it's going to be many, many more. Imagine, as you say, had there been a Fukushima-like nuclear plant in the Philippines.
Right. You and I should do comedy more often. I mean, this is going to be a grim hour, folks, but we got to get through this. And, of course, that's one of the reasons the corporate media won't cover it. Because it's too... They'll lose viewership if they come out and tell the truth about what's happening at Fukushima, as they refused to do about Chernobyl or Three Mile Island or the Gulf spill, for God's sakes. I mean, how long did it take to get even a reasonable report from the corporate media about what was happening in the Gulf?
Now, well, here in Japan, as I'm sure you know, they have these institutions called Kisha clubs, which are press clubs, okay? Mm-hmm. And the press clubs in Japan are very exclusive. And what they mean by that is they exclude all sorts of people. They exclude foreigners. They exclude freelancers. They basically exclude anyone but what you would call the corporate media of Japan. So they're in bed with TEPCO, the corporation which is responsible for this disaster, and they're in bed in general with all the other players in what's known as the nuclear power village. So they all live in a village. They're all in this club together. Well, guess what? We have exactly the same situation in the West, although it's less formalized. So there is a club, a press club, and there's an accepted wisdom that they get from their peers in the nuclear power village where they all live. And that's the result, that we get a lot of reportage that basically is incestuous. Now, I don't want to tar with such a broad brush, because there has been some good reporting. There hasn't been enough. Okay, Martin Fackler, for example, people who were reporting, in the Financial Times and the New York Times, when the event was happening, there was some good reporting on the ground. But what happened is a lot of the coverage then dried up. Unfortunately, as we know, the problem didn't dry up. In fact, tons of radioactive water is now one of the big problems.
Well, Fackler had a Japanese co-author, and he did a generally excellent article in the New York Times about the water, the radioactive water coming through. But, and they always do this, there was the obligatory one-paragraph disclaimer saying experts agree that this is not going to have a health impact. They always seem to have to say that. The corporate media will not acknowledge the radiation, the health damage that radiation can do. I have yet to read in any major corporate media a reasonably open-minded assessment of the death toll from radioactive emissions. Well, they can't handle that.
No. I mean, I would agree with you generally on that. So as I said, there has been some good coverage, but it's been spotty. But what we find is actually there's a tendency towards two things. One is what we call in nukes meek the minimization. They minimize.
Wait. Don't go much further. You co-wrote a book called Nuke Speak with Steve Hilgartner and Chad Thompson.
Dick Bell, and
Steve Hilgartner. And this was published in the 70s, and you dissected the language used by the nuclear power industry to sanitize.
To sanitize and to sell, essentially, nuclear technology.
Right. And we're still living with that. So I didn't want to – I hope I don't derail your train of thought here.
No, because, in fact, I'm glad you brought it up.
I haven't really introduced you. This is Harvey Wasserman here at the Solartopia Green Power World Show, talking with Roy O'Connor, my buddy of many decades, who pioneered in this book, Nuke Speak, the dissection of the Orwellian language used by the nuclear power industry to sanitize and divert and essentially put to sleep people who have questions about the nuclear power industry. And Roy remains, with Danny Schechter, one of the leading experts on media and nuclear power and how the corporate media doesn't cover the issue. Now we know, Rory, so go ahead.
Well, and in point of fact, you know, we put out a second edition of Newspeak 2 years ago, so I actually was writing one of the final chapters about Fukushima as the accident was unfolding, even at that time.
And you were writing about the coverage.
I was writing about the coverage. I was writing, as they say, about the Kisho or press clubs, about the nuclear incest, the nuclear power village. I was writing about loops, for example, you know, a loss of off-site power, which is what happened at Fukushima. But, of course, we know that that was a beyond-design basis vulnerability, you understand.
Okay, now, that means that they didn't design the reactor to deal with the situation.
With what actually happened,
right,
which we find happening time and time again. So this is what we call the minimization, the sanitization of risk, if you will, in Newspeak. And what we find is that the media, through this nuclear village, this incest, if you will, between the government, the corporations, and the media, in this kind of unholy troika, if you will, they tend to do two things. One, they minimize the bad news about nuclear power. The flip side is when there is a good energy story, and, you know, we don't want to just be bleak, as you were saying. There's a lot of good news in the energy field now, too. But what happens is that gets underreported, and when it gets reported as bad news. For example, in Germany, as you know, they're in the process of totally getting rid of nuclear power entirely.
Right, right. And bringing in renewables.
And bringing in renewables. And what have you read about the situation in Germany? You've only read bad news about how going to renewables is actually making the climate worse.
Yeah, but you have to admit that the Fox News, in covering the switch to renewables in Germany, outdid itself. There's a moment, some idiot at Fox News on some show, they're talking about this, and they said, he said, and he can make this up. He said that the reason Germany is going to renewables as opposed to the United States is because there's so much more sunlight in Germany than they do in the United States.
Especially in California.
Yeah. You know, that probably got more coverage for the conversion to, nobody could believe he said that. But it was what we call an Ann Coulter moment.
Okay. But that's as they say. So when there is good news, they'll either will minimize it. For example, how many people know, how many people have read in the media here or elsewhere that the cost of wind installation is down 50%?
Oh, it's continued to plummet, yeah.
It's plummeting. That the cost of solar is down at least 10%. And no, but instead, what we find out is that the tax credits that encourage us to use renewables are in danger of going away. So what I think we need is, not only do we need a totally new comprehensive energy plan, we need a parallel, totally new comprehensive media plan for covering this subject.
Well, we have it. It's called the Internet. I mean, you know, this is an Internet radio show, and you write for the Internet, and Danny's on the Internet. I mean, they won't have us at the mainstream shows, you know.
Let's not be so pessimistic, because things are changing, and things are changing rapidly. And when you're faced with this kind of, forced change, when if you look at the New York Times today, I believe it's a front page story outlines how much of Florida will disappear by 2050 from the effects of climate change. As you know, most of the state is only 2 or 3 feet above sea level as it is. So I think that the coming, if not the present, climate emergency is going to move the mainstream media, the lamestream media, the corporate media, however you want to define it, into looking for new voices. And so I think that it's incumbent on us to, for one thing, get a new generation of people who are prepared to, you know, move up and step out when the mainstream media comes to us. Because I'm predicting it's going to happen in the next decade.
Well, I think that the Internet media is outstripping the corporate media. I mean, who watches that crap anymore? We're with Rory O'Connor here on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Call us at 888-874-4888 if you're inclined. Listen on the phone, 619-550-0869. We're talking about the media and nuclear power. In the next half hour, we will talk about what's actually happening in Fukushima. So grab your Prozac and your antidepressants, the whole deal, because it's bad. We just saw CNN utterly prostitute itself with a ridiculous piece of garbage called Pandora's Promise. There was a big argument about whether we should mention it all and call attention to it all. So I very or just ignore it. I tend to not want to ignore those things. I think they self-destruct. But you gotta.
Well, it was on CNN in prime time.
Yes,
so it's hard to ignore.
Very gratifying article, which I'm going to be posting at nukefree.org.
Did terrible ratings.
Terrible ratings, under 400,000 viewers, which is, you know, certainly less than Modern Family, for God's sakes, which I love.
Certainly less than Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah. We have a caller? Okay, let's take a caller. Let's see. I'm always curious when we get a caller.
His
name is Harvey.
Harvey from Berkeley.
Harvey from Berkeley. You've called before, Harvey.
Yes, I have.
How do you feel, by the way? There's a major show on now called Suits, and the main character is named Harvey. It's the first time that we've had a main character in a modern TV show named Harvey. I'm thrilled, actually. So, Harvey, I hope you're thrilled.
I haven't actually seen it, but thank you for telling me about it.
So what do you got for us today, Harvey?
Well, I have a couple things. Well, one is like talking about solar. Well, you know, in the future, it's all going to be about our freshwater resources, and it turns out that coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear power plants are the second only to agriculture in their daily use of our freshwater resources. And, of course, solar panels, once manufactured, use no water over the 20 to 25-year warranty or even longer of their lifetime. And
I wait. There's one thing you got to be careful about that. Now, you know, they do use water to wash them.
Okay.
And I'm not a big fan of that, but there are numerous solar arrays in the desert, primarily, or in hot areas, sun and dusty areas, where they do use water. Now we want to find alternatives to that. But go ahead, Harvey.
That's why I love photovoltaic so much, because photovoltaic does not use any water. Mm-hmm. Photovoltaic solar cells. So I think that people who put in solar electric installations, should get what I call a solar water credit for the water that their panels didn't use over the years, because that's a lot of water when you consider how much the coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear power plants. So it would be a solar water credit.
I like that. I agree with you entirely.
Thank you. And the second one is just, of course, close the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. I could add one more paranoid thing if you want to hear it.
Absolutely, if it's paranoid.
Nothing better. Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you.
No, well, it's true, but it's kind of scary. Well, you know, here in California, we have what is known as saltwater intrusion, and that occurs when the aquifers are being pumped out as fast, you know, for people drinking water, and the salt water sort of inundates the aquifers. Well, here, if you're having the Fukushima water, radioactive water arriving in 2014, salt water intrusion might create radioactive freshwater aquifers in California.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. And on that happy note,
right.
Harvey, what else you got?
Let's get star powered. It's time to get solar.
Very good.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Harvey.
And
call
you
anytime.
Star power.
We like that. Star power. So Harvey's right about water there. Today or yesterday, the 10th or 11th, the Times finally ran a pretty good piece, about the bring down of the fuel at Fukushima. And, you know, the fact that at Fukushima Unit 4, there is a fuel pool damaged with debris in it, 100 feet in the air. Everybody I say that to gets incredulous.
Mark 1 GE design for
no
you.
Containment. You know, as you'll remember, you know, studying the media, the nuclear industry loved to say about Chernobyl that there was no containment over Chernobyl. The containment over the Chernobyl was at least as strong as whatever building has been on top of the fuel pools in the General Electric reactors in the Mark I. And this chicken came home to roost at Fukushima, because we did have a fire in the fuel pool at Unit 4. They're denying it now. It's amazing to me. But I shouldn't be amazed, but we're now starting to hear people say that the fuel did not catch fire in Unit 4, but in fact, there's a letter from the International Atomic Energy Agency citing the fire.
What people are saying, that people from TEPCO, the utility, from the Japanese government. One thing we have to look at that we haven't talked about, if there are callers out there, I'd love to hear them about this, the possibility of a need to internationalize this situation. You know, are the Japanese executives at TEPCO or the Japanese government, in fact, even capable of...
absolutely not. No, actually...
Well, they're in charge right now, so yes. This is scary. Thought, isn't it?
Well, that's the petition we have at nukefree.org, which is linked to moveon.org, asks for the United Nations. But not, I ran into a minefield with the United Nations because the International Atomic Energy Agency of the United Nations is
correct.
A pro-nuclear.
Yes.
Their mandate is to promote nuclear power. And so if you ask the United Nations to get involved, are you asking the International Atomic Energy Agency? And we don't want to do that because it's a big, and the IAEA has... an agreement with the World Health Organization to not, publicize the dangers of radiation.
Yes, I'm well aware of that. And they were very active in Chernobyl as well.
Yes, and they're continuing to deny, these are radiation Holocaust deniers, as far as I'm concerned. And I realize it's a loaded use of verbiage to use the term Holocaust, but I am Jewish. And
it's funny you don't look Jewish.
Yeah. I'm a Jew. I'm just kind of Jewish, but that's a Seinfeld line. The IAEA denies that any radiation damage. And whenever you debate somebody about Chernobyl, they always go to the World Health Organization studies, which say nobody died there, which is just ridiculous. And so it's not an unbiased body, but. In thinking about who to internationalize the site, you kind of have to go to the UN, but you want to go to the General Assembly, and you want to do the General Assembly to do this exclusive of the IAEA. And that's a problem we run into, but what else we got besides the UN, But you're absolutely right. We have to internationalize the site, and that's one of the things we need the media for. Now, the Times finally ran a story about the beginning of the bring down of the fuel. Yes. At Unit 4, which we have been talking about. I've been talking about others, Arne Gundersen, for a year at least, understanding that this is serious
problem. It's been
a
disaster waiting to happen for 2 years.
Well, we're deeply grateful to the gods of seismic shocks that they have stayed away from Fukushima.
And keep praying to them that as they move those spent fuel rods one by one, we don't see a repetition of what happened.
Well... in the second half of the hour, we're going to describe in greater detail exactly what's involved there. But I want to talk about CNN now. Mm-hmm. They ran this ridiculous piece of garbage, Pandora's Promise, which is paid for by Paul Allen, the Microsoft billionaire, buddy of Bill Gates, who has deep investments in so-called new nuclear technologies. And this, I actually should not have a complaint with Pandora's Promise. Because it begins with me. He starts off, and we're at a rally in Midtown, in New York, Manhattan, on the water. And starts off with Helen Caldicott. And she's Helen talking about the health damage. And then he's got me there. And I'm talking about what happens was I ask permission to use the F word. Right? This is my David Ortiz moment for all you sports fans. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do, yes.
Okay, so...
Boston Strong.
Yeah, David Ortiz got in front of, in Fenway Park, a packed Fenway Park, after, in the commemoration of the marathon.
On live television.
And live television worldwide. And he says, this is our effing city. But that's not what he said. He said, this is our effing... And everybody went, and then they thought it was the coolest thing. And there are now people walking around Boston with T-shirts to say, this is our effing city. And Rory and I both have some Boston roots. So
Bucky effing Dent, let's not forget.
Yeah. So I open up and I say, this is our effing city. And then I say, this is, can I use effing? And I talk about effing nuclear plants. And, of course, now we know the F word is Fukushima. But and then I give a whole thing about Solartopia, and I end with the word Solartopia. And he must have thought I looked really awful in this. And I've talked to my friends. They didn't think I looked so bad. And that's the only time I'm in the film, thankfully. And then the use of the word Solartopia has never gotten more publicity than it did with Pandora's Promise. Now, Pandora's Promise is a blatantly dishonest, and Bobby Kennedy called it an elaborate hoax.
A big lie.
And it's guaranteed designed to make us in the anti-nuclear movement look bad. And every bad shot they could get of Helen and of Amory and, of Bobby and whoever else they could throw in there, they did. But it proceeds and just makes light. I mean, it's a war crime. It makes light of the damage done to human beings by radiation at Chernobyl, at Three Mile Island, and elsewhere, and at Fukushima. And there's one scene completely idiotic where the guy is at Fukushima, allegedly. I mean, it could have been in the Bronx, for all we knew, with a Geiger counter. And he's taking radiation levels, and they go all around the world, and they show comparable radiation levels. As if that had any relevance to anything. I mean, you can be at Fukushima in a spot and find a low radiation level and walk 10 feet away and be blown off scale.
Or worse, you could go to the ocean bottom right offshore there and find the hot cesium pocket that the bottom-feeding fish are feeding on.
Right. And then he does this at Chernobyl, and he does this at Three Mile Island. It's insane. It's insulting. And then they interview people, and they show the WHO reports. And they interview a priest at Chernobyl and said, oh, I've been here 25 years, nothing has happened. I mean, come on.
You all know there's like people who've been chain-smoking five packs of Pall Malls for 35 years and they didn't get cancer either, but the odds are you're going to.
Right. And of all the things in this film, that's the most abominable.
Well, but, you seem more exercise than I am. I mean, this is not one in line.
I'm 68, right? I gotta get exercise wherever I can.
It's the new nuclear apologists, okay?
Right.
Looking at the climate change and saying, well, this is a carbon offset. It's
ridiculous.
I can understand why people would want to go there, but, all you need to do is just examine the facts, and the whole thing falls apart rather rapidly. I don't think it takes an hour-long documentary on prime time to get there.
Right. So this documentary, mockumentary we call it, proceeds to make the case, a case, for new nuclear. Now, I watched these guys through the day on Thursday. They had interviews, so-called debates at CNN, and CNN was blatantly biased against the opposition. It was really kind of gross to watch. I mean, they gave way more time to the proponents in every interview, and they didn't have hardcore guys. They had people on there who were actually against the current generation taking the alleged anti-nuclear seat. And then winding up arguing for new nuclear plants.
Well, this is what I was saying. There are a number of people, as you well know, from the quote-unquote environmental side who have gone over to the dark side. They're not hard to find.
No.
But, again, you have to look at this in context, okay? So Jeff Zucker, who now runs CNN, which aired this film, he used to be a very big executive at NBC, which was owned by General Electric. Now, I remember back in the 80s when they ran an hour-long documentary on NBC called Nuclear Power, In France It Works.
Right.
Literally, that was the title.
Zutawar. Beaucoup de mer there.
In a sense, there's nothing new under the sun. The question is, what are we going to do with its rays?
Yeah. So, at any rate, they failed in this documentary to disclose that Paul Allen was a major funder and does have, at least his buddy has interests in new nukes. But the bottom line, Rory, and I'm sure you'll like this, is my conclusion is that it's obviously not going to have it's not going to have any impact at all. And my favorite moment in the whole saga is that the day after they ran Pandora's Promise, this pro-nuclear thing, Texas Luminant Utility in Texas, the biggest one in Texas, canceled two nuclear plants. So the scorecard, I have a piece up. This is at EcoWatch and at Nuke Free, and it's making rounds on the internet. We'll have it here at PRN. Is the Pandora's box score? Pandora's box score on nuclear is that we've shut five operating reactors in the United States this year so far. We've canceled nine proposed reactors. and we've stopped six uprates where they're going to raise the
well,
levels.
Look, of course, the Robert Stones of the world would say yes, but the nuclear power that he's pushing for has nothing to do with those type of nuclear power plants. In fairness to him, and I only come back with one word to anyone who is a proponent of nuclear power, and until they can respond to this one word, I don't think there's anything further to discuss. And the word is waste. What about the waste? Now, the proponents of the new nuclear power like to say that the new nuclear power won't produce waste. But what about all the waste we already have?
Yeah, well, they claim it will consume that waste.
And how long would that take? What about the waste that is piling up in the tons and tons of water in Fukushima every day?
God, don't even want to think
We're creating more and more waste every day, and as we know, we have no idea what to do with it. And until somebody answers that, until that stops being treated as what they call in economics an externality, something that has nothing to do with the problem, there's really very little further to say.
Right. And, of course, I was sitting here trying to guess what word you were going to come up with. And the word I would use, which Bobby Kennedy used quite brilliantly, actually, in a segment on CNN, they let him.
Your name's Bobby Kennedy, they
exactly.
let you.
Was insurance. And, these reactors can't get insurance.
Well, they've never been able to get insurance that wasn't subsidized by, in America, as we know, the federal government. And without that subsidy, they would never agree to build the plants. Why? Because they're so risky that unless you have subsidized insurance, it doesn't make any economic sense.
Right. This is a Solartopia Green Power and Wellness show. This is Harvey W. here. We're talking with Rory O'Connor, co-author of NukeSpeak. And much, much else about nuclear power. We're talking about the media and atomic energy. And you can call in if you like at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. That's fun to say. Listen on the phone at 619-550-0869. So, Rory, this article in the Times, to me, was today covering... The bring down of the fuel at Unit 4 is a big breakthrough, because as you and I know, this has been discussed for at least a year now, since Arne Gunderson, really, in Vermont, brought it to our attention. I mean, I wouldn't have known to really write about this, but Arne's website is Fairwinds, Fairewinds, .org, and he is a former nuclear engineer. I guess he's still a nuclear engineer. He's in the industry for 20 years, making fuel rods or dealing with fuel rods somehow. Amazing. A wonderful guy. Very gentle and well-spoken.
Extremely knowledgeable about that.
Very knowledgeable.
Yes.
And he has really been our basic source on the core problems.
Pun intended,
yeah, at Fukushima. So let's get into that now. I want to take an inventory of what's going on over there. We have Fukushima Daiichi is a site with six reactors. Now, units 5 and 6, thankfully, were built a little bit up on the hill, a little higher than the level of the tsunami got. And the generators, the backup power generators there worked, and they were not, the reactors were not operating at the time.
Yeah,
thankfully.
They were offline.
They were offline. So they were, and I'm sure that TEPCO still harbors illusions or visions of reopening those reactors. But I don't think they're going to.
That's not going to happen. In fact, I think that's been ruled out by the government
That
could change, sure.
Yeah, and if they want to go, the big question, if they want to build an ice wall, where are they going to get the power? So you could almost imagine them. And I tell you, there are crazier things have been proposed, Toshiba, one of the Japanese companies, has been approached to build small reactors in the tar sands fields to power. They want to build nuclear reactors to power mining tar sands.
Well,
I mean, and they say we're on drugs. I mean, my God, that's absolutely.
And then they were going to use nuclear reactors to power spaceships and rockets.
Right.
I mean, there's a kooky nuclear idea for just about every
about
application.
That's
okay?
Right. Make it a sitcom. I know. Let's have a cartoon show where the lead character...
The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Or we can have a cartoon show where the lead character is a nuclear power... Oh!
Now I have a good idea what we can use this for. Yes.
Anyway, and who can?
It's not all doom and gloom.
We're forever indebted to the Simpsons for Monty. What's it? Monty Burns. Who could?
Montgomery Burns.
My favorite.
Yes.
Okay. So at any rate, units 1, 2, and 3 did melt.
Partial core meltdown.
Partial.
Well, at least.
At least partial.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
Yes.
Now, as you and I both remember very well, during Three Mile Island, of course, you're much, much younger than I am, during Three Mile Island in 1979, they denied. They denied that there was any melting of fuel. And then, of course, it only took 9 years to get a robot in there, and they'd say,
Oops.
Yeah,
well, yeah, we didn't know.
We didn't know. Yeah, what a crock. And then, of course, Chernobyl exploded, and the industry said, well, you know, that's a Soviet design. As you and I know, in the beginnings of the anti-nuclear movement, if anybody got up and said, oh, the nuclear power plants can explode, the industry would jump down their throats.
Right.
Say, you ignorant, no nuke hippies.
Right. Exactly.
You know, you're in that. You don't know what you're talking about scientifically.
They can't talk about explosions in the same sentence.
Inherently safe. That's the term that they use, and that's what they're using for this new generation, so-called. I like the new generation reactors because they don't exist. Now, they're inherently safe because they're only on paper, right? I agree with you. New generation, they're inherently safe. As long as they're
built. And let's keep them that way.
Let's keep them that way. Exactly right. So
so you have those three, but you also have number four,
right,
which is the one that case in point as
Although
we speak.
Arne Gundersen says, you know, he encourages us all to discuss and to talk about the situation at Unit 4. But he says that it's going to be worse at Unit 3 and 2 and 1, that they have to dismantle, they have to decommission somehow. Where is all the fuel? Where is the spent fuel pool?
They may end up doing what they've done in Chernobyl, which is just keep burying it under successive piles
of bigger
sarcophagi.
The problem at
I know you have a problem. That's what I'm saying.
Well, the problem at Fukushima that you don't have at Chernobyl is it's on the ocean. That's the problem. Aside from the fact that there are four they're going to have to cover up instead of just one. But, you know, having it near the ocean here is...
But right now...
It's a nightmare.
Even as we speak, number four, with the spent fuel rods, with the pool up above...
Flying in the air.
Because there is an immediate and present danger.
All right, so let's discuss it now. I'll never forget, in the early days, it was day two, day three, day four... of what was going on, and somebody from our side, might have been Arnie, maybe Bob Alvarez, described for John King on CNN. And I have to say, in the early days, CNN's coverage of Fukushima was very good. And there's two moments I'm going to tell you, two CNN moments. One was Anderson Cooper was at Fukushima, I believe with Sanjay Gupta. Mm-hmm. And he was talking, and Sanjay Gupta, started talking about radiation. And you could see Anderson Cooper, I won't say his hair went white, it was already white, but you could see his eyes kind of like, oh, my God. And the next day, he was in Tokyo. They left. I'm sure he got on the first car out of there.
It wasn't that safe in Tokyo.
No, it was not. Then the other moment, and since we were talking about, it depends on where you were. The other moment here was early on, somebody from our side described to John King the nature of the spent fuel pool, which is, of course, 100 feet in the air and outside the containment. And John King looked like he had just, you know, stepped in something. And he said, God, that's a bathtub on the roof, which is exactly right. That's what it is. It's a bathtub on the roof. So what we have...
Filled with highly radioactive...
material.
Yes.
So we have Rory O'Connor at Unit 4. We have a spent fuel pool. Now, thankfully, the...
tell people what spent fuel, because, of course, that's
total misnomer. Well, what happens is nuclear reactors run on rods that are in a... They're uranium-237, is it? 239 or 235. One of the isotopes of uranium that emits neutrons is put in pellets. There are they're round and almost rectangular, flat ended and then circular. And they're about, I don't know, an inch or so.
They're rods, essentially.
Well, no, but the rods are made out of pellets.
Yeah.
These aren't solid rods. The pellets go into a tube, and the tube is made of zirconium alloy.
Mm-hmm.
And Fukushima, I understand, are about 15 feet long and about an inch maybe in diameter. So the geniuses who did this make the cladding out of zirconium alloy. Zirconium alloy, when it's exposed to air, will ignite very brightly and very hot. Zirconium is what you put into flash cubes to make them give you a bright light.
Right.
So you have these in the core. Now, at unit 123, they melted and they off-gassed hydrogen, which exploded. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the explosions at unit 1, 2, or 3 may have been actual fission. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And in Fukushima's promise, the industry talks about how we recycle weapons material into nuclear fuel. The problem is it's incredibly expensive, really dirty, creating tremendous amounts of additional pollution when you do this. And then when you put the rods into the reactor, and I think it's Unit 3 that they did this at Fukushima, it might be Unit 2, you have plutonium.
Right.
And so the rods at unit either 2 or 3, the fire there really off-gassed a lot of plutonium, which is the worst substance known to humankind. You can breathe in a minuscule microgram of plutonium and get lung cancer. So at any rate, the rods at unit 4 had been removed prior to the earthquake and tsunami.
Because they basically were used up. That's what they mean by spent.
But they were doing maintenance or an inspection or whatever.
So they took them out
and they put them in the bathtub
on the roof. Store them in water to keep them cool, because if they get too hot.
Yeah, they will blow up. Well, they'll ignite, let's put it that way. And so when the earthquake hit, while the other three, 1, 2, 3, were melting, Unit 4, the rods were in the air, and they were extremely radioactive. There's some that weren't, and they did a test removal of two of them. They seemed fine. Now, unfortunately, when the disaster hit, we had a fire. The radiation was emitted. They're now denying this, but we do have IAEA documents saying that this did happen.
Mm-hmm.
No containment, radiation into the atmosphere, poof. But because they lost coolant, the TEPCO, given the situation, had no choice but to dump in seawater.
Because
which is the last thing.
If these things are not kept cool,
correct,
all hell breaks loose. So they're pouring water, which of course then becomes radioactive.
Right,
and what do they do with it?
They dump it in the ocean, or
they store it.
They store it in ridiculously
until it leaks into the ocean.
Or now they have 1,000 tanks. Thereabouts on site, each of them containing thousands and thousands of gallons of this radioactive water. Part of the problem at Unit 4 is that when they use seawater, they didn't want to do it, but they had no choice because seawater is corrosive.
Of course.
And so you've got this zirconium alloy and whatever else in there exposed to seawater.
So they don't actually know what shape these fuel rods,
yes,
above reactor 4 are in, and they themselves may be damaged, which would make the removal process even more fraught.
Shall we say virtually impossible, because the removal process involves these fuel rods have a hook at the end of them, essentially, and they take another hook and they lift it out. Now, under normal circumstances, it's all computerized. And the crane is controlled, and it just works, and blah, blah. But now they have to do this manually. It's like going to the amusement park with one of those, claws.
And they have a huge crane. Now, what happens if there is an earthquake while the crane is in action with one of these nuclear rods suspended in midair, for example?
Well, what they do then is they The things to contemplate are...
There are nightmare scenarios every step of the way that are potential here. Now, there's also the potential that they're not terribly damaged and that over time they could possibly get them all out safely. That's only the very, very beginning.
Well, I'd like to know the Las Vegas odds on that. I mean, the idea that these rods got through what they got through, an explosion, a fire, salt water, an earthquake... that they got through undamaged, What are the odds on that? You have over 1,300. I've seen various estimates. Nobody goes lower than 1,300 for hot rods in there, and then maybe a couple hundred that were never irradiated. But nonetheless, all it takes is a couple, because what you have an array, and they're lodged in the array, and you have to pull them out. And so they have to be reasonably straight, and they have to be not swollen, and they have to be they have to have structural integrity. If these things are embrittled or already powdery, you're going to lift them up and you're going to get radiation.
Then they're going to have to stop immediately, and then they're going to have to say, well, now what are we going to do?
That's right. Nobody knows. This has not happened before.
Nobody knows.
So the whole operation is done underwater. And they just announced, I can't remember the number, I think 36, they're going to have shifts of six guys at a time, I think, doing this for 2 hours.
2 hours each.
2 hours each.
Correct.
And they're going to have to be taking Prozac. Or whatever else.
They're going to have to be
meth. They're going to take meth. And, now, and they will.
Iodine and everything else.
Everything else. And they will have to sit there and operate this crane like an amusement park, you know, claw, and pull these rods out one at a time and hope that they come out. Because if they're swollen or they're bent or they're corroded or they're embrittled, we're screwed, because they could conceivably release enough radiation to force the evacuation of the site.
Well, you know, it all sounds so crazy that one would say, well, why are they doing this? And the reason is because they really don't have any other choice.
They have to.
They must. That's how bad the situation is.
Well, tell us why.
There now, because it's so dire that they have to do something they've never done before that's fraught with all kinds of risks that you just outlined, because the alternative, which is doing nothing, is not really an alternative. They cannot sit there with these spent fuel rods suspended in midair forever.
One of the prime reasons is, of course, that everybody, and I mean everybody, expects another major earthquake. And so, God forbid, another earthquake comes, and Unit 4...
And they had a 7.1.
They had one, yeah.
I mean,
and they've had two typhoons, by the way. Two, not one, two typhoons, and one of the typhoons dropped 10 inches of water.
Maybe that's why you shouldn't build your nuclear power plants in an earthquake and tsunami zone, do you think?
Well, we have a reactor that works perfectly fine. It's 93 million miles away, and that's the one we need to use. So, the New York Times did a reasonable job, finally, of covering this. And you and I had the discussion before the show. I like to think that the Times only, you know, covered it because we've been making so much noise about it. Who knows if they would have covered it if we hadn't.
It's a big story. I mean, I think they would have covered it. Would they have covered it the same? Would they have covered it as prominently? I don't know. But
well, you and I have a very clear remembrance of the effect of our media on the corporate media at Three Mile Island. Now, everybody takes for granted that Three Mile Island was a big deal. I will guarantee you, in 1979, there would have been zero. Well, there would have been a paragraph here or there about Three Mile Island had it not been for the demonstrations at Seabrook and then the China Syndrome.
Well, absolutely.
I don't think
yes.
the media would have covered it at all. And I'll give you a prime example of that. We do have a minute or two. I lived in Ann Arbor. I went to the University of Michigan, thank God, one of the world's great places. And I was on the Daily. I was a senior editor, and we had an AP machine. We were plugged in. And in my senior year, 1966 to 67, we were totally preoccupied with the war in Vietnam. Then in the 1970s, they had to drag me kicking and screaming out of Ann Arbor. I would still be there if I could. And then in 1976, 7, when I started getting involved, 5, when I got involved with the nuclear power movement, no nukes movement, we were looking for books. And I read a book called We Almost Lost Detroit. Hmm. And in this book, this guy says, oh, yeah, in October of 1966, when I was 40 miles away, this reactor in Monroe, Michigan almost blew up. And it would have. It had liquid sodium. And I just said, wow, October 1966, I was in Ann Arbor. I never heard a word about this. We would never have heard a word about Three Mile Island had it not been for the no nukes demonstrations and then the movie, The China Syndrome.
Well, if you see something, say something. That's
right.
What I'm telling people.
And Chernobyl, who would have hounded the Soviets about Chernobyl had we not had a movement? So is the New York Times now covering Fukushima? Why? Is it because of us? Maybe. You know, who knows? But nonetheless,
We need better. We need coverage of the positive alternatives. We need to know why Germany, the largest economy in Europe, can get rid of this stuff, but somehow we're told that the United States economy couldn't possibly do so.
Yes, and that's a big deal. And there's two words on that one, which is baseload. And they did this in the film and in the discussions. The claim is that renewables can't provide 24/7 flow of energy. And what the Germans have done, you know, that hippie nation, the Germans, only the fourth largest economy in the world, have done is they have balanced solar, wind, biofuels, geothermal efficiency conservation in a manner that you do get 24/7 energy from renewables.
We could make changes in our transmission system. Look, we all know, and if you don't know, the studies are there, okay? It's doable, it's possible, it's affordable. We simply need to come up with a comprehensive energy plan to get from here to there and a comprehensive media plan to provide the background to get us there.
Right. And so I think that what on radio shows like this and the work you do, that Danny does, Danny Schechter, the News Dissector, here at PRN, Gary Knoll, I mean, just banging away at our media, we are superseding the other media, and we're impacting
them. You never know when you're going to have an impact. There could be one person out there in radio land who can make all the difference who's listening to us right now, and I certainly hope so.
Yes. Well, I got to say, one guy in the media that's come around is Bill Maher. He was pretty pro-nuclear, doesn't like to admit it now, but he is now pretty vehemently anti-nuclear. I think if there anybody that could permanently kill the industry, it would be Colbert. A couple of good zips from Colbert.
Well, Obama could help.
Yeah, well, now Obama has been with, the industry for a long time. He did no service to himself. Or the rest of us when Fukushima happened, and hasn't said much about it since.
He's been talking about the nuclear renaissance ever since he got elected,
right.
Okay? But I haven't heard much talk of that in the wake of Fukushima and what's been going
no.
on. So,
and we
so
have,
maybe it's time to turn our attention to Hillary, to 2016, and really, because we have a little bit of time, but only a little bit of time.
Yeah.
The runway is not that long.
Well, we don't know how much time we have.
Exactly.
Given
so.
What's going on. Given what Fukushima may be doing in the Pacific Ocean, that is the story.
And where is the reporting on that? Even in California,
zero. Right?
No, where is the docks? Radioactive docks are rolling up on the shores. There's not enough reporting on this. I don't understand it. When I wrote the new edition of Nukespeak with a whole chapter about Fukushima. I was hopping up and down and going, hey, everybody, this is amazing. It's Chernobyl all over again. Oh, my God. And I was astounded at the lack of reaction. And frankly, I continue to be astounded at the lack of reaction, and not only from the media, okay? Because you know what? In a certain sense, we get the media we deserve. So if you don't like the news, go out and make some of your own, as Scoop Niska used to
say.
That's right.
And report on it yourself, too.
Exactly.
And go on the internet, listen to these radio shows. But I think we're going to start to see the media is going to have to face this. I think people are going to understand how bad this really is. And what I'm hearing from the Pacific Ocean, huge dead zones, radiation now. CBS has reported that radiation has been confirmed off the coast of Alaska. There's been a horrifying die-off of starfish in the Northwest, which may or may not be related to Fukushima.
I saw some statistics on births on the West Coast as well,
yes,
there was infant mortality was being affected. As these sorts of things take a while to show up in any conclusive way. Sometimes they take decades, unfortunately.
Right.
But isn't it common sense? Isn't it logical to think that radiation, if it's being poured in the Pacific Ocean in Japan, is going to end up on the shores of the United States, if not elsewhere? Of course it is.
Right. Of course, for the industry, it's the dilution solution where they say the ocean's too big. So, here another Pete Seeger coming in. Pete, take a rest. Okay, thank you. This flew by, as I knew it would. Rory O'Connor, media expert, co-author of Nuke Speak. And great to be with it. What's your website where we're at?
Yeah, I'd like people to follow me on Twitter. It's at Rock Global, R-O-C Global. That's my current means. I've moved on from blogging. I'm just tweeting.
All right. And come to nukefree.org and prn.fm. Thank you so much, everybody. Another hour of the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. And thank you, crew here in New York. We'll see you next week.
To pay the cost, and so we went digging into the